Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Professor David Schultz, good enough to join us from Hamlin. David, always good to visit with you. I hope you're well.
I am doing very well, doing yard work today like everybody else.
Yeah, I was able to get a fair amount done. I have a number of peonies around the house, and I wait until they start to turn before I trim them down to ground level. So I've begun that process, kind of cleaning up some of that stuff literally around the house. The gardens have been done for quite a while. So, yeah, it's kind of sad, but also good to get the chores done outside. David, the Minnesota State Legislature got some chores done. They came back for another special session, and it shows that compromise still exists. The DFL, the Republicans, were able to get together on a huge bonding bill.
No, they did. And I was going to say, that, what, the fifth time is the charm on this one. And I sort of knew they were going to pass it this time for a reason, is that we are now, what, just a few weeks before election, and this becomes something that both parties can go back to their constituents and say that they're bringing back jobs to their communities, jobs to their districts. And so, not to be totally cynical, of which I am a little bit here right now, saying that they waited until the last minute to do this, and in a way that they now could deliver, again, goodies to their constituents and use that in their campaigns. But whatever the motive, you're right. We needed to do this, even beyond the jobs bill we needed to do. As many of us know from driving roads or bridges or around the state, looking at maybe some, like, you know, city halls or whatever like that need some work, this is a good bill. It's a good bill.
Yeah, I mean, this really runs the gamut of infrastructure projects, building projects, maintenance projects at colleges and universities. You talked about roads, water treatment plants. It really does run the gamut. And this bill was a big one. I know there was a lot of resistance by the Republicans, but ultimately they gave in, I guess, on the size of the bonding bill.
No, they did. Yeah, I think that. Yes, they were concerned about it. And I think one of the concerns that we all are going to have coming back next year, of course, is the fact we're going to have an enormous deficit blown in the state budget we're going to have to address. But I think short term, what we're looking at here is trying to get the state back to work and, again, do all these needed repairs. And you're right, the Republicans, you know, were concerned about the size of it. They were of the bill, but they were also at one point, let's say, concerned about the governor's orders regarding the pandemic, and that was a sticking point also too. But I think at the end of the day, the Republicans probably gave more on this than the Democrats did. But again, I think they did this for primarily, I think, political strategic reasons.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, in 2021, there will be a heavy lifting on what to do with budget deficits, really, that run the gamut. School districts, state government, county governments face big challenges because of what's happened during the pandemic. Increased spending, and then, of course, decreased revenue across the board. This will be a gigantic political challenge in 2021. What to do? There's really two options: cut spending, raise taxes. There really is no other option.
No, you're right. It's going to probably have to be a combination of both. I know state and local governments are hoping that they can get a bailout from the national government, but that just sort of like kicks the can. I'm not sure what the metaphor. I want to say down the road, or is it up the hill? Whatever right. metaphor I'm looking for here.
Sure.
Because if the federal government bails out, then it's going to be running a larger deficit. And it's the same thing. Do we borrow more? Do we increase taxes? Do we cut spending? I mean, we're going to be faced with some tough problems. For not just the short term, but for a long time. There was an article that came out, was it in several of the newspapers, was it yesterday in the news, that we're running one of the largest federal budget deficits ever in American history. So we are facing some tougher long-term budgetary issues here.
Yeah, and we're still not through the pandemic. One of the headlines that caught my eye, rural hospitals in Midwest struggle to handle surge of virus cases, that out of the Star Tribune. And it speaks to the fact that this isn't over yet. We haven't been through a full winter. We don't know how this will play out in the coming months. We don't know when a vaccine will be available. There was a thought it may be available sooner than later. Some of those trials have been delayed. But the simple fact of the matter is we're not out of the woods on COVID-19.
We're not. One of the better books that I've read recently, there was a book that came out a couple of years ago, and it was on sort of the 100th anniversary of the 1918 pandemic. And I'm forgetting the title. It might have been called 1918, but I can't remember now. And it pointed out that pandemic back in 1918 went through three waves and lasted well beyond 2 years. Now, I am sort of hoping that we don't go, you know, quite as extensively as that did. But when I read that book and I think about the present, you know, we've only been fighting this out, what, 6 months now, 7 months?
Sure.
If the lessons of 1918 are anything to be believed, we still have at least a long winter to go. It's in terms of what could happen. And so we've gotten impatient in thinking that this is going to be over really quickly. And I think the lesson of history is that it's a longer battle.
And this could have a gigantic impact. I think COVID-19 front and center in this upcoming election. There's always other issues, but this has had a ripple effect in just about every corner of our society. And a little over 2 weeks from now, we'll see what happens and how much of an impact COVID-19 and the fallout from it have when those votes are counted.
You're absolutely right. What we've seen so far is that obviously 6 months ago or 7 months ago, no one would have been talking about the pandemic. Yeah. So in and of itself, it's an issue. It's also, we know that especially among the elderly who have been a core base for Donald Trump, there's indications that his handling of the pandemic has not pleased them, and there's movement politically among them. But also, and this is like the news story that you had on just before I came on, you know, how the pandemic has changed our election system. What is it? I think Steve Simon said something to the effect of, what was it, like 800,000 or 900,000, whatever the number was, are voting early, and across the country, we're going to see a tremendous percentage of the electorate casting votes early. So the pandemic has changed American politics this year in the way of both it being an issue, how it affects the economy, and also how it affects how we are voting and how the candidates, of course, are campaigning.
And going forward, beyond this election cycle, will we see a change where once upon a time when I first started voting, when I turned 18 a long time ago, longer than I want to admit, and it was a big deal, the vast majority of people went to their local polling place or local precinct and cast a ballot. We've seen that change. People are busier. There are more options. I guess my feeling is that this is a beginning of a major change, that people will be able to vote X amount of time before Election Day. That'll be the deadline to cast a ballot, but I think it'll continue to be commonplace going forward.
I do, too. And even before the pandemic hit, we know Minnesota had changed its law to make it easier to early vote. And we knew across the country that approximately 37 or 38 states had had eased their laws to make it easier to vote in advance of Election Day. In many ways, what the coronavirus did was to really accelerate a trend that we had already seen going on in our society. Because there are so many of us who've got, you know, who find it far more comfortable or easier to vote in advance or pick the time when we want to vote, whether it's by the absentee ballot that's mailed to us or to go down, you know, to the Board of Elections in advance of the election and actually cast it in person. You know, because for many people, you know, Election Day, you know, it's a Tuesday, you know, we may have work, we may have, you know, childcare types of issues, et cetera, et cetera. It's not always convenient. So I think this is just going to accelerate and we're never going back. It's going to be now, how do we adjust the problem of early voting with the fact that during that early voting period, what if something were to happen? And this is what we're glad, all of us are glad, I hope all of us are glad this didn't happen, in the sense that nothing happened to the president that he had to pull out of the race because of his health. That what if he had to, let's say, what if, and no one wants to have happened, what if he had passed away or was so ill he couldn't run for president? With all those early votes cast, how do we handle all this stuff? So that's going to be our next issue to have to think about here, is again reconciling this early voting with sort of last-minute changes in news or maybe status of candidates, and how do we adjust this?
Professor David Schultz is joining us from Hamline University. One of the things I wanted to get into, and there's always rumors and stories, the latest stories that have come out about Hunter Biden and some of his activities. The New York Post had a story, Rudy Giuliani's been involved. But the simple fact of the matter is that rumors, dirty tricks, nasty stories have been part of American politics really since the beginning.
Well, you're absolutely right. I was going to say there's a great American tradition of one side sort of planting stories against the other, making up things. I mean, this goes back, you know, I was going to say right to George Washington's era. So nothing's different or new about that. I think the only thing that is different now is really what? The way that the social media amplifies it. And to some extent, sure, I'm going to say how it puts pressure on the mainstream journalists and media. And I say that because, you know, and many people may not realize this, and you're in the news business, broadcast business, so you know this, that you have a canon of ethics regarding things that you can do, when you can report stories and so forth. And what the social media does is throw stuff out there that even if it's not verified, not corroborated, and this just sort of throws information out there that now can have a huge impact, you know, on American politics or how we think as we're looking at Facebook, Twitter, you know, whatever it may be. So I think the real big difference now is the degree to which, let's say, the rumor, innuendo, falsehoods, dirty tricks can just move so rapidly now compared to, and so far, I'd say not just rapidly, but how deeply they can move now compared to, let's say, even a quarter of a century ago.
You know, the stories you've read about previous elections, whether they're an election in a given state for senator or governor, or for that matter, just in presidential politics, you know, some of the rumors and dirty tricks over the years are pretty extraordinary, even by 2020 standards, but social media didn't exist. But there were some pretty awful things said about one candidate or another by their opposition.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, over time, go back to the 19th century, there were rumors about Grover Cleveland, you know, having a non-marital child. There's been stories about, you know, constantly about, you know, presidential affairs, some true, sure, some not true. Rumors about what, let's say, their mental health or drinking habits and so forth. And just even claims about maybe, did they in the past, you know, like rig elections to get where they are? So we've had tons and tons of stories out there over time. But you're right. I think now it's just the degree to which it's in our face, the degree to which, again, we can put on the social media and somebody can now offer a conspiracy theory or make up a set of facts and make up something that looks like a headline that says such and such a news claims person did such, you know, whatever it may be like that. So this is a new dangerous environment that we really have entered, where this line, you know, between which we've always had, but now it's even worse, between sort of, you know, what my, what some people call real facts and false facts, or alternative news, really is taken on a new meaning in the social media world, and in a world right now where we are pretty significantly polarized compared to where we were, again, about 40 years ago.
And in our chats this year, in the lead up to this point, a little over 2 weeks before Election Day, one of the things we have talked about, particularly in recent weeks, is there aren't a lot of undecided when it comes to the presidential election. Well, it'll be President Trump or Vice President Joe Biden winning the election when all the votes are counted. That trend hasn't changed. There aren't a lot of undecideds.
But you're absolutely correct. At this point, in mid-October 4 years ago, it was about 14% undecided, especially in the critical swing states. I mean, now we're looking at best, you know, 4 or 5%. But I'm still not even convinced there's 4 or 5% undecided, truly to the point of saying, I'm not sure if I'm going to vote Trump versus Biden. I think people have made up their minds. It's, you know, who they like and what they know about and what they think about the candidates. It's really a question, are they going to show up and vote? And so the new concept of swing is, do you show up and vote or do you stay home on election day? But otherwise, I don't know anybody that hasn't made up their mind already regarding what they think about these two candidates. And this also becomes important to understand, too, because historically, that undecided voters, when they do decide to vote, generally break fairly heavily against the incumbent. And the reason why I'm saying all of this is that if the polls are to be believed, and there's no reason to doubt them, I mean, the polls were accurate 4 years ago, and I think they're accurate again now, is that Trump's behind nationally with a dwindling number of undecided voters, and he's behind in a lot of critical swing states with a small number of undecided voters. It's not saying that the election is over, because it's never over till it's over. But right now, the numbers are not looking as good for him as they did, I would say, even 2 weeks ago.
What makes 2020 so unique, and I'm sure it'll be studied by historians, it'll be one of those years that stands out, like 1968 comes to mind. I happen to be 4 years old in 1968, so I don't remember it, but a studied year and all the turmoil, et cetera. So we'll look back at 2020. Here we have Amy Coney Barrett on the brink of being placed on the Supreme Court, a lifetime appointment. It was a big story, and it doesn't feel like it's moved the meter that much.
It hasn't. It hasn't at all. Again, I think people already, again, have made up their minds. At best, in terms of how they're going to vote, at best what I think it will do is maybe motivate a few additional voters, perhaps, to vote. But otherwise, I think we went through this week with the two sides reacting to her nomination and hearings in predictable ways. And it's just hard to see how, with an electorate that already seems so hyper, so motivated to vote, how this is going to have much additional impact at this point.
We saw one presidential debate universally panned, that first debate. They made changes. President Trump wouldn't participate. There were COVID complications. Instead, we saw dueling town halls. Joe Biden on ABC, Donald Trump on NBC. We won't get into the ratings. I don't think it's important. But will we see a final presidential debate before Election Day? I know you don't like to speculate, but my guess would be the signs aren't good for the parties getting together and agreeing on a debate.
I don't think that's going to happen because, first off, you know, Biden, again, appears to be the front runner right now, appears to be, not saying, you know, that he's guaranteed to win, but he has nothing to gain from agreeing to another debate. And Trump wants a format, again, similar to the very first one, and there's no way that I think Biden's going to agree to that. So I think it's pretty unlikely that we're going to see another debate. And again, I sort of wonder longer term now, are we going to see that this is the presidential election that killed off debates as we know them, and that in the future we're going to see something completely different? I mean, the whole sort of era of television televised presidential debates, you know, goes back to 1960, Nixon, Kennedy. You know, it's been going on for 60 years. We may be ending a cycle of this approach for how politics and presidential debates are being organized.
Yeah, so we'll see if it actually happens on the 22nd, just 5 days away, but a lot can change between now and then, that is for sure. Well, David, good to visit with you as always. Are you going to still have time to get out and get some more chores done?
I am. I should make everybody jealous. We harvested about 2 quarts of raspberries today and Ooh. Got the very last remnants of our tomatoes.
Wow, good for you. Now, I suppose some of those need to ripen indoors, but that can be done.
That can be done. We'll throw them in a paper bag with some apples, and we should be okay in a couple of weeks.
Oh, good stuff. Raspberries. Mm. And didn't you have a big pear crop?
We did. We had another 500 pounds of pears this year. you know, my joke is I'm going to, like, quit my job and just sell pears in the fall or something. It's just a phenomenal amount. So you and I should talk at some point off the air about maybe we'll do a swap. I'll give you pears, and you can give me, I don't know, nothing. I'll just give you pears, you know.
Yeah, well, I could share acorns from my bur oaks. I'm not sure what you would do with those. The wood ducks,
I'll feed my squirrels.
Yeah, the wood ducks and squirrels flock to my yard for the bumper crop of acorns every year. They start to fall in August for sure. Well, David, good
Excellent.
To visit with you. Thanks.
Same here. Talk to you soon. Bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.